Hey, welcome to Politico Tech. Today is Tuesday, November 14th. I'm Stephen Overly. President Biden is slated to meet with Chinese President Xi Jinping tomorrow, as world leaders from across the Asia-Pacific region gather in San Francisco. Biden and Xi were last face-to-face 1 year ago in Bali, Indonesia. And you may recall that back then, they pledged to course-correct relations that have soured in recent years. There have been fits and starts since then. On the one hand, high-level meetings between Chinese and U.S. diplomats. On the other, more U.S. trade restrictions on Chinese technology. And that whole Chinese spy balloon drama. Biden and Xi now have to navigate tensions over microchip production and artificial intelligence as the U.S. and China battle to be the world leader in emerging technology. There have been some initial signs that cooperation may be possible, including a reported agreement on the use of AI in defense. On the show today, I spoke with Xiaomeng Lu, the director of the geotechnology practice at Eurasia Group. She tells me why tomorrow's meeting matters, but may not actually lead to any major breakthroughs. Well, listen, thank you for joining us on Politico Tech. I appreciate you making the time. What are your expectations for this meeting that's happening this week?
I think this is a goal that set up by Biden and Xi last year on the sideline of G20 meeting. The two leaders met and they recognized that things has got out of control a little bit. They agreed that the two sides should come back to the table. And obviously, early in the year, the balloon incidents derail the whole track. And it took multiple months and both sides of efforts to get things back on track. And this is a sign that the relationship is going into a period of short stabilization. The leader were able to achieve their goal set up last year and see each other in person again. This is definitely a milestone for the bilateral relationship.
You know, the short periods of stabilization does ring true when you think about the spy balloon incident, right, from earlier this year that seemed to derail things. It seems like they seem to get on track and then something happens that, you know, knocks the relationship off track again.
Yeah, I think speaking of getting things off track, I think the biggest risk after this presidential meeting could be one of two things. One is Taiwan election happening next January. It looks like the candidate unfavorable to Beijing authority, William Lai, has a good chance of winning. I think if he takes on the presidency, there's a chance of risk coming from a more aggressive Taiwan posture on the U.S.-China relationship. And then another one is technology restrictions, because the October 17th rule, as we have seen it in the past months, did a minor expansion from last October's sweeping technology restriction. But I think there are a few more drastic options that the U.S. government has been holding back. It's possible after the two president meet, the likelihood for U.S. government to revisit those more dramatic expansion could come back to us.
Can you elaborate on what those drastic options might be and how China might respond?
Yeah. So one of the more drastic action could be the expansion of export control restrictions to cover cloud service provider, because companies like NVIDIA has leveraged the cloud infrastructure to share their high-end computing power with the world. Theoretically, Chinese entities, companies can access that through cloud. So some of the policymakers in DC has been viewing that as a big gaping hole in the overall export control regime. That's one option. Another option is there, I think in the past months or so, there are multiple congressional letters pointing to a semiconductor technology group called RISC-V. It's an open source technology group that both Chinese and American companies contributed to. And some of the Chinese contributors are also entity list designated companies. And some of the lawmakers have been arguing that's a way to get around export control technology and transferring U.S. technology IP to their Chinese counterpart, or at least benefiting them in a way that's counteracting the goal of export restrictions over the years. And some lawmakers has proposed to put more restrictions to curb U.S. companies' contribution to that technology foundation. That's another big ticket item. I think if U.S. activate those two options, China may put more retaliatory efforts into the works. Last month and over the summer, they put licensing requirement on graphite, which is a important components, mineral components to make electric vehicles, and also gallium and germanium, which are new semiconductor materials and key raw minerals for making electronic and machinery equipment. They put licensing requirements on those. They haven't fully activated those, but China could take another step further and use that as a retaliatory tool.
Yeah, it does seem to me that China has sort of flirted with some of those restrictions, but there's a lot more that they could do in retaliation if they made that choice.
Yeah, one of the deterrence factors is if they do that, there will be negative impact on the domestic stakeholders. The companies mining those minerals or processing those minerals, they will have a big shock because their buyer list just got shortened. And then global supply chain will experience certain level of disruption. So China, it's hard for China to find near-term retaliatory measure that doesn't hurt themselves in the foot. That's why they have been hesitating in using those options. But if push come to shovel, they feel like they need to do something in response and to show that they have some tools in their arsenal. We may see more escalation in that regard.
And then you did mention these export controls that the U.S. has put in place last year on microchips headed to China. This year, they tightened those restrictions further. I know that China very much views those measures, which the U.S. says are for national security, China very much views them as, you know, an attempt to stifle its own technological ambitions and innovations. I mean, is that a topic that you think President Xi will be eager to discuss or put kind of on the forefront of this meeting?
Yeah, the Chinese side is very, very eager to discuss that. They want an off-ramp for these export control measures. They argue that there's there are over 600 Chinese companies on the entity list, and there's no way for these companies to demonstrate to U.S. government that they don't pose security risk. Therefore, they shouldn't be on there. They want to create a new venue for companies to get them off the entity list, which is a very, very hard thing to do from U.S. government perspective. And I can see them trying to push that type of agenda very, very aggressively. Like when Renamondo was in China a few months ago, they established this dialogue, but the dialogue on export control is not a venue for negotiation. It's, in Raimondo's word, a place to communicate our policy intention to the Chinese. But they really want to, the Chinese side is keen to address this issue to the extent I think they are trying to weave this topic into the AI track of the dialogue and use the pretext of AI supply chain disruption to cover the topic of technology restriction. I think that's how eager they are. They are trying everything and being very creative in their ask.
We'll be right back. Well, I want to ask you, you know, there have been reports that when Biden and Xi meet this week, they're going to agree to a ban on the use of AI in autonomous weapons like drones and nuclear warheads. I should say at the time you and I are talking, the White House has not yet confirmed this. But how significant would that kind of agreement be?
I think right now this is still a big question mark, given the extent, the scope of that potential agreement is still hanging in the air. You can tell that there is a policy trend for the two sides to talk about AI's involvement in military machinery. If you look at Chinese PLA's AI deployment principle issued in 2021, and DoD did similar things back in 2020. I think if you just look at their high-level public available principle, you can see certain level of similarity. I think both sides have the general sense that they don't want our autonomous tools and robotics to trigger a military conflict, let alone a war, without human permission. I think that's the thing that they could potentially agree to. But still, I think devil's in the detail. The two sides, you could argue, have already had similar type of conversation in the UN context. That's a more multilateral discussion. But I think if the two sides can agree on something concrete and public, that's a good starting point. That will help rekindle the military-to-military conversation between the two countries, which has been a roadblock for a long time as well.
Right. And it strikes me, too, that this agreement would come very soon after both the China and the U.S. signed on to this AI safety pledge, you know, at the big UK safety summit. Do these developments indicate to you that there is some cooperation happening on the tech front between China and the US, or is it too soon to really be that optimistic?
I do think AI is a new technology area, and there's a bubbling interest from both sides to at least communicate about their policy objective. I think the UK high-level AI principle is non-binding, technically speaking, but at least Chinese Vice Minister of Science and Technology went and presented China's position on the issue along with counterparts of other countries, including their U.S. counterparts. I think that's a good starting point for them to share thoughts on this and understanding what's the difference, what's the agreement. And that's one incremental baby step towards reaching something in agreement, hopefully, if not at the summit, later in the bilateral process.
Right. It strikes me that fundamentally, any agreement like this has to be based on some sort of mutual trust. And it does seem like there has not been a lot of trust between the U.S. and China. How do they sort of turn that around, or what do they need to prove to show that these agreements really will be upheld?
Yeah, I think face-to-face meeting could be a instrumental step in the process. You know, if during COVID and the chilling bilateral relationship in recent years, both shut down a lot of these communication channels. But since the summer, we've seen multiple cabinet-level officials visiting China and their counterparts coming over. I think the face-to-face interaction do help build trust. I think that's the first step. Even we probably will not make any earth-shattering commitment at this summit, but the in-person interaction between the two leaders is a good step towards that. Like, I would argue we should build trust first before we reach any agreement. Because if you look at what happened in the past, the U.S.-China used to have this cybersecurity agreement that was a high watermark for the bilateral relationship. You could argue that the implementation didn't go as smooth as they planned. But at the time, the two sides had faith and they come together. And there was a period after their agreement where the cyber activities from both sides reached a low point. In retrospect, you could argue that was the value of the agreement. That's still better than no agreement.
This mentality that the U.S. and China are just locked in this technological race, right, over AI, over microchips, over sort of all of these things, and that there will be a winner, right, that the winner will get a major boost to its military, to its economy, you know, et cetera. Is there any changing that, you know, at this point? And does that need to change?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the two sides should recognize that sometimes it's not like what's the line between military and civilian use, you know, for technology at its nascent stage at AI, it's very hard to draw the line. I think it's kind of intuitive for the political stakeholders to say, we want to prevent the military use of AI at the cost of commercial entities. But you are talking about killing the whole industry, you know, like it's a zero-sum game and no one will come out as a winner if they keep pursuing this in the most extreme way. But in the very, very early stage of technology development, you should keep the information coming and going and keep everyone sharing the same information of pool and work side by side by each other. More transparency will better inform the security risk somewhere down the road. If you stop innovation today, you don't know what China is doing. China doesn't know what US is doing. I would argue, foster more security risk than an open playground where you have more visibility and better communication. That way, I think that's the best way to mitigate security risk.
Well, one more question for you. You know, we start our conversation talking about some of the upcoming tension points in this relationship, including like the election in Taiwan. Another one is the U.S. presidential election coming up next year. It's interesting to me that there is a political pressure now to appear tough on China. And we heard that, you know, recently in this Republican presidential debate, there was a lot of criticism of TikTok and its, you know, supposed connections to China and risks that may present. Do you see tech continuing to be this sort of political target that, you know, when politicians in the U.S. talk about being tough on China, that tech will be the focus of that conversation?
Yeah, I think you already see the sign of that from the latest round of GOP debate about TikTok. It was very close, I think, to the extent earlier this year there was a proposed restrict act that could have the legal power to ban TikTok. It didn't happen. But I think next year, the rhetoric around that will heat up and tech will become the lightning rod in the next political cycle. I see that happening anytime at this moment.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Politico Tech.
Of course. Thank you for inviting me.
That's all for today's Politico Tech. For more tech news, subscribe to our newsletters, Digital Future Daily and Morning Tech. Music in today's episode comes from the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Our senior producer is Annie Reese. Our editors are Steve Heuser, Daniela Cheslow, and Louisa Savage. I'm Stephen Overly. I'll see you back here tomorrow. Thank you.